Welcome to the Frontier Space Podcast with Coleman Lutz, where we'll discover how space technology, geospatial intelligence, and much more are changing our world. So thank you so much for joining me again today. In our second episode, an intro to satellites and the space economy, we will discuss the current trends, challenges, and history in our industry, including some market predictions. For now, listen up and let's learn. We are living amidst the second global race to space. And today, the entire space economy is valued at $400 billion. As a matter of fact, at as high as 80% of that activity is for commercial purposes, and almost half of which is from the United States. The new space economy is predicted to be a $1 trillion industry by the 2040s. And one estimate from the Bank of America values the space economy near $3 trillion in that similar lapse of time. Richard Rocket, New Space Global's CEO, said that over the last 5 years, it's gone from tracking 125 space companies to over 1,000. And we expect to be at 10,000 the next 10 years during a presentation at MIT's New Space Age Conference. I mean, that's incredible. It's almost, how do you comprehend that?
We can begin shifting our mentality to make space less the final frontier and more like the next startup garage.
But to continue in this introductory episode, the four largest markets in the space economy are respectively satellite launch, manufacturing, internet communication, and Earth observation. Here's the history of the satellite market in a nutshell. In October of 1957, the Soviet Union stunned the world with the launch of Sputnik, the first satellite ever.
1 year later, the US followed with their first satellite, known as Explorer.
This sparked the first race to space amidst the Cold War, and the national competition between the Soviet Union and the US transformed the very fabric of space, science, and technology as we know it today. Some questions come to mind, such as, where would humanity be if the Cold War never actually existed? And so over the course of the following 50 or 60 years, around 8,100 satellites have been launched from more than 40 countries. I mean, that is an incredible accomplishment for mankind.
Satellites used to be very large and hand-built, such as NASA's 4,800-pound Landsat 7, which was launched in 1999. In comparison to today, a company known as Planet Labs launched their 88 Dove nanosatellite constellation. Each dove is the size of a shoebox, weighing 11 pounds each.
And according to the United Nations Register of Objects launched in outer space, there are around 5,000 spacecraft still in orbit, with around 2,000 active satellites, or only 40% that are still in operation today. This means that there are over 3,000 hunks of metal, 60% of space junk, whizzing above our heads every day doing absolutely nothing. And this would be excluding the 128 million pieces of space debris smaller than 1 centimeter. 900,000 pieces range in size from 1 to 10 centimeters, and tens of thousands of pieces from 10 centimeters or larger in size. And this seems very crowded in low Earth orbit, but surprisingly, there is so much room and space. So of the 2,000 on-orbit satellites, around 40% are communication and 40% are Earth observation, which are generally the two main purposes of satellites. And according to history, typically we have seen the number of communication and Earth observation satellites balance off at the same level. That is, until the era of new space-based internet communications and 5G. To summarize the present and future of global broadband connectivity, SpaceX's Starlink constellation plans to deploy nearly 12,000 satellites in low Earth orbit, which is unheard of, by the way. OneWeb, Telesat, Amazon, and LeoSat, and many others have similar goals. OneWeb and Telesat plan to launch constellations numbering in the hundreds, while Amazon's Project Kuiper will peak around 3,200 satellites. So all of this is happening as we speak to bring connectivity to an estimated 4 billion people around the world who lack high-speed internet connection. And this explosion of an additional 16,000 or so satellites are mainly for internet communication and data transmission purposes. So my question to you is, what happens when the broadband satellite connectivity market matures? As a matter of fact, what is happening with the telecommunication and satellite internet explosion is happening with other types of satellites, with all sorts of multifaceted functionality, but on a more gradual scale. While the most common satellite is for communication and GPS location-based purposes, we have only begun to explore the endless possibilities from imaging spacecraft. So these forms of remote sensing satellites utilize radar or passive imaging systems and or electro-optical sensors with active imaging systems to acquire photography from space. And we will discuss the differences, benefits, and challenges of each other in another episode soon. On the imaging side of the equation, these spacecraft capture information about Earth by imaging in different spectral bands along the electromagnetic spectrum to monitor patterns related to weather, land, water, terrestrial objects, climate change, and a whole lot more. Now, if you said, who cares, and why is this relevant? Well, because each data set has tremendous value with a unique offering that enhances communication between industries, policyholders, and decision makers. These data sets recover invaluable amounts of human time, money, and energy, and have fundamentally revolutionized our understanding of planet Earth. And without these hunks of metal, our lives would be drastically different. Also, the not so talked about form of satellites includes the International Space Stations, or the ISS. Did you know, very recently in June of 2019, NASA improved policies to encourage the commercial use of the ISS with a docking port for commercial modules. I mean, how exciting is that? It's a brilliant idea, and we will dive deep into all the exciting things happening with the ISS in a later episode. You know, for any science and research experiment, there is also the value-added space segment of your publication that transforms your understanding and scientific results. So my advice to you is that if you're interested in science, biology, diseases, chemistry, and other disciplines, is to start considering how could space and the effects of microgravity influence your research ideas. So the growth in the space economy over the last half century has been fueled by several key political leaders and presidents in the US. And historically, space economies have been largely occupied by governments and large organizations such as NASA. Although when we consider the federal and government organizations, fiscal budgetary concerns, policy adjustments, and contrasting elected successors creates more friction in the workflow. Therefore, with more fluid decision-making and commercial operations, the space industry has been experiencing much more commercial and private sector activity over the last decade. Also, while doing some research into NASA, I was astounded to discover how the development of space technology has influenced society today. To name a few, water purification systems, vacuum cleaners, ear thermometers, wireless headsets, computer mouse, CAT scans, and LED red light therapy all stemmed from research and engineers working in space. Modern society, science, and technology would be fundamentally different than what it is today. Anyways, switching gears to the present day, there is high competition between large players in the space sector, and Not to mention that when billionaires have visions, they are often much more likely to come true. So Jeff Bezos and Blue Origin have ambitious plans to colonize the moon. And Elon Musk and SpaceX have a similar vision for Mars.
Although, as of recently, humanity has devoted much more time and resources on pioneering lunar colonies on the moon. Even SpaceX is reevaluating Mars plans and now considering to use the moon as a stepping stone, which is what ULA, Astrobotics, Blue Origin, NASA, ESA, and several other organizations have been expressing for a while. By adjusting our information streams, we can begin transforming our perspectives of the vast economies in space. For example, I casually read that the Hayabusa 2 JAXA spacecraft, operated by a Japanese agency, embarked on a journey through outer space of around 3.2 billion kilometers since the launch in 2014. It was traveling at 13 miles per second and simultaneously landed on an asteroid 200 million miles away from Earth. Hold on, can we just take a second to conceptualize that inside of our minds? Now that human accomplishment alone should inspire you that if you set your mind to it, anything is possible. So where does this leave us? Well, one takeaway from this episode is to start thinking of the new space economy from a new light and a different perspective. To come to the realization that space economies and technology soaring beyond Earth's outer rim are the very primitive stages of development. It's like the period in human history before the internet was born. We should begin conceptualizing each space science as a new economy, academic field, and subspace sector. So imagine this. Over the next 10 to 15 years, the science fiction of the 20th century will become reality. I mean, how do we comprehend that we will be an extraterrestrial species in a few years? Do we celebrate with a moon party? But for the purpose of this podcast, we will explore the outer limits of these exciting industries in space after researching and expanding our mindsets back here on Earth about how geospatial information and remote sensing are changing our world.
Thanks for listening over there. I hope to have inspired you about satellites and the new space economy in this episode. In the meantime, look out for the next episode coming soon called Earth Observation 101. This is Coleman Lutz, checking out. Until next time.